Good morning, happy Friday, and welcome to another live edition of our weekly Sheffield United podcast. I'm Steve Jones, and joining me is the Star's sports editor, Chris Holt, as well as our Blades correspondent, James Shield. James, Cardiff versus the Blades this weekend, two improving teams. How do you see this one going down?
Yeah, I think this will be a really tough game. We asked Paul Heckingbottom about this fixture this week. Obviously, it was one of the main points of his pre-match press conference. I think that's stating the bleeding obvious. And you know, I think both teams. I can understand why people will say both teams are in a false position in the table. I would dispute that. Paul Heckingbottom disputed that as well, and I'm sure Steve Morrison would. I think at this point of the campaign, you are where you deserve to be. But I think Cardiff will pose a really, really serious test and will be a really good barometer of exactly where Sheffield United are in terms of their recovery process. I think any team managed by Steve Morrison, somebody who Paul Heckingbottom knows really well, of course, and we'll probably get onto that later. I think any team managed by Steve, you know, is going to be very physically strong. He's going to be very, very competitive. Cardiff, as Paul Heckingbottom pointed out, scored more aerial goals or more headed goals than any team in the division this season by some considerable margin. So there's clearly going to be a threat there, and it's away from home as well. So you know, in Cardiff's backyard. So yeah, really, really strong test, I think, this one, and I think it will be particularly telling because I think Sheffield United's character is going to get tested in this match as much as their sort of footballing calibre. We know they've got plenty of that. They've not always shown it in the past, but we know there's ability within that squad. I think it's fair to say that at times under Slavisa Jokanović, and those question marks haven't entirely been erased because they've only played one match under Paul Heckingbottom so far. But I think it's fair to say there have been question marks about Sheffield United's attitude and approach in games so far this season. So it's going to be interesting to see how they cope with the test that Cardiff will pose.
We are live on Facebook, by the way, so if you've got any comments, any questions, just get them in and we'll read them out. Chris, do you anticipate a bounce after that Bristol City result?
I don't know. You just don't know. You expect there to be a bounce for the first game. And they were fortunate in that they played a Bristol City side who, let's be fair, were a bit rubbish, if we're honest. So it wasn't really, as James said, their last week didn't really provide us with a great barometer as to where Sheffield United are at under Paul Heckingbottom. And I mean, you can't judge anybody on their first match anyway. But this will, I think, probably give us a better idea of, as James said, probably the character more than anything else, because they're going to be bombarded. They're going to have to really dig in, you would imagine. I mean, I don't think it's too much of a cliche or anything like that to suggest that Cardiff are a very physical side, and so United are going to have to. They're going to have to do all the dirty stuff before they start trying to play any football that we saw in kind of fits and starts last week against Bristol City. So you would like to think there'd be a bit of momentum. You like to think that if nothing else, there will have been a little bit of confidence gained from last week's win, and they'll go there with their tails up. But like I say, it's going to be a really tough one. And actually, I think, although I'm loath to again talk about two games in to a reign being as something that we can judge a team on, if they come out of this one with a positive result, I think that would tell us an awful lot more about where we are with the Sheffield United team.
James, what was your verdict on that Bristol City, the performance and the result?
Listen, the result, absolutely brilliant. You know, almost the perfect start to a new manager's reign. A win, 3 points, and a clean sheet, just as importantly, because, you know, I've touched on it in the paper this week. That is something, that's one of the most important things that Paul Heckingbottom is going to have to address, because you know, let's not pretend that everything was terrible under Slavisa Jokanović, because it wasn't. And they're already, you know, there were signs of progress, I think it's fair to say, in terms of results before he was sacked and Paul Heckingbottom came in. I think Sheffield United was still really checkered, that, you know, they were still really inconsistent, but, you know, they were beginning to piece together an unbeaten run. And I think that's important, because confidence is going to be at a really low ebb. There's no doubt about that. And I think this is the way you get out of it. It's not going to be just flicking a switch. It's not going to be, you know, a new manager coming in is a panacea for all of the problems that Sheffield United have had this season. It will be a slow process. So I think the performance against Bristol City, listen, it wasn't brilliant. There's no doubt about that. There were flashes, as Chris said, but we've seen flashes of play before in the past. I think the key thing for me was that on the rare occasions when Sheffield United were placed under pressure in the game, they didn't crumble. And that's something that we have seen on numerous occasions since they've been relegated from the Premier League. So I think that was a box ticked. But, you know, it's going to be a slow process. The way they're going to get confidence back is not going to be by winning one game here, drawing one, etc. So it's going to be by winning a couple in a row. It's going to be, you know, by putting together a 4, 5, 6 match unbeaten run. And it's going to be hard work, because, you know, the self-belief isn't going to be great. I think, you know, as Chris said, I totally expect Paul Heckingbottom to do well in the short term. I think there's good reasons why I think he'll do well in the short term. He obviously knows the players. I think he will go back to something that's a little bit more familiar for the squad. But there are still question marks about the medium and long term, because, you know, Slavisa Jokanović came in. He obviously wanted to change the culture of the football club. He wanted to change the conversation around the football club. And a new manager is always going to want to do that. I think Paul Heckingbottom is under less pressure to actually do that, and probably feels less need to do that, because he's already worked at the football club. He's been in interim charge last season. So there isn't quite that same demand for him to do something different. So he will do something that the players are familiar with. And as I've said, I think that will lead to some encouraging results in the short term. But going into the medium term and the long term, he's still going to have to address some of the problems and some of the issues that Slavisa Jokanović clearly wanted to address at the beginning of his reign. That's when I think we're going to really start to see where Sheffield United are, not only as a team, but I think as a football club as well. Because there's been plenty of good talk. There's been plenty of, you know, discussion about new managerial structures and what those will bring to the football club. But at the moment, you know, I'm stating the obvious here. I'm not being deliberately awkward, as I'm sure some members of the hierarchy probably think I am at times, but I'm not. At the moment, that is just talk. We need to see how this works in practice and if it will be allowed to work in practice. And those questions haven't been answered yet, and they won't be until a couple of months in.
Chris, on that note, do you expect a return to the 3-5-2, or, you know, a winger still going to be a priority in January, for example, or you know, has the script been torn up again?
I wouldn't expect it to be now, but I think James has written today, about the formation and the flexibility that Paul Heckingbottom is going to have, and that he said that he is willing to have in his formation. What we will see is him making the best of what he's got, which he's got no choice to do. I can't imagine him, if I'm honest, bringing in the types of players that Slavisa Jokanović was looking for. And if he is going to make changes to that team, I would imagine it's probably likely to be in the summer rather than in the middle of the season. So I would suggest that he may bring in a player where a player or players where he could slightly tweak the system potentially mid game, or depending on who the opposition are. But I would suggest that given the squad that he's inherited, which is very much weighted towards playing with three central defenders, I think that is here to stay, certainly in the short to medium term, i.e. the rest of this season. And then by next summer, I think we may start to see exactly what Paul Heckingbottom wants, what way Paul Heckingbottom wants to play, because it would be quite a change for him to try and implement that in the middle of the season. I think it'd be too much, if I'm honest, given the players that he has at his disposal.
James, is it possible, do you think, to, I know you said you still think that the Blades can get promoted this season via the playoffs, but is it possible that simply, you know, just one man changing at the top can actually trigger that change in the team's fortunes?
No, in a word. It can help. Yeah. But no. You know, football ultimately is about players, isn't it? And, you know, properly functioning football clubs are able to bring in the right players. So that's what we've got to see. You know, I think Paul is a really capable and gifted coach. Sorry, football manager. I'll get into trouble for calling him a coach. Slavisa Jokanović was a coach. Paul Heckingbottom is a football manager. It's a strange new title, I know, but that's what we're told he is. But then again, so was Slavisa Jokanović. You know, let's not pretend otherwise. And I think Sheffield United will be doing themselves a disservice if they don't, at some point over the next few weeks, take a really good look about why Slavisa Jokanović struggled to achieve a great deal at the football club. You know, at the moment, it's pointless probably doing that at the moment because relations and feelings will be a little bit raw behind the scenes. I think it's fair to say that, you know, it wasn't a marriage made in heaven in terms of the relationship that certain people had with Slavisa at the football club. But so I think it would be wrong to do that now because those feelings would sort of colour the analysis. But at some point, they've got to look at that. They really do have to. And they'll be at fault if they don't do that. And they'll be in danger of just repeating the same mistakes. You've got to learn from your past. You've got to learn from your mistakes. And I think you've got to be brutally honest when you analyse situations like this, because that's how you get better. But no, in short, Steve, no, Paul Heckingbottom being given the job won't solve all the issues there. I don't think even Paul would try and pretend that. And anyone who does is just plainly wrong, in my opinion.
Yeah. Well, thanks for you didn't mince the words, James. I appreciate that. Chris, we'll move on to January because everyone likes to talk about transfers. It seems like, obviously, I think Heckingbottom alluded to himself, it's going to be more outgoings than incomings. Of the strikers in the building, is it fair to say this is the end for Ollie Burke?
I think that would be the most obvious one, yeah, because he doesn't seem to be able to find a place in the team. He doesn't really fit the system. It was a strange signing anyway. In hindsight, I mean, it was another one of those ones where things hadn't been going particularly well for him, and he's turned into a player kind of similar to Jack Rodwell, I guess, where he's become one of those players that managers go, I know I'll get the best out of him, and it never quite works out, and he'll move to the next one and somebody else will say, you know, I know what I can do to get the best out of him, and it doesn't really work, which is a great shame, because if we're honest, if he could finish, he would be playing for Real Madrid rather than not being able to get on the Sheffield United team, because pace-wise and skill-wise and, you know, his reading of the game and his movement is excellent. His finishing is just isn't up to it, and that's why, you know, he's struggling to find his way into a team who are mid-table in the championship. So, yeah, if there are anybody who could come in for him, even if it is on loan, you would imagine that he would be the first one out the door. I can't. Everybody else, probably bar McBurney, but that's kind of, well, depending on what way you look at it, but it's not through any fault of his own. The way the team has been playing and the way the team has been set up and the injuries that he's had and COVID things and everything else, he's found it difficult to get into the team. But there is something in Ollie in that he's different to those other strikers and he provides a different option for the manager. So I would certainly be reluctant to let him go. And then you've got Moussa, who, given what he's capable of, and the fact that his contract is up at the end of the season, if someone was to come in with a reasonable offer for him, I think that would be considered. Because no matter how many times we say, you know, if we could just get him fit here, we've got a great player on our hands, it just doesn't seem to happen. And you might as well cash in rather than just let him skulk off to the McDonald's drive through in Paris or Lens or wherever else.
We are live on Facebook, by the way, so if you've got any comments or questions, just drop us a line. James, are there any other obvious outgoings that you can see? I think you wrote maybe today or yesterday that it's likely to be limited to those who are kind of well out of the picture, or at least out of the picture.
Well, it should be. Whether or not that it, you know, the situation actually sort of develops like that, we're about to find out. I think. Listen, what will decide who stays and who goes? And I agree with pretty much everything that Chris said there. But ultimately, Sheffield United are a Championship football club, and what will decide it is two things, and that will be performances and the market. I say performances because if you scroll back a couple of weeks, I think most people would have been saying, I wasn't one of them, but I think most people would have been saying, you know what, if you can get someone to take Rhian Brewster on loan and contribute a sum towards his wages, that seems like a pretty good deal. I don't think it would have been personally. I think it would have been pointless, but you know, that you could understand the argument there behind that. But nobody's going to be saying that now because he scored twice in his last three games. And, you know, we've done a really sort of, we had a really good chat with Rhian before Sheffield United set off for Cardiff this week. You know, and he's clearly in a really good place at the moment. So, you know, that's changed there, hasn't it? Who's to say if Lys Moussa comes back into the side and, you know, scores four goals in two games, you know, it's not going to be a great deal to, you know, on the face of it, if he's allowed to leave. So I think, yeah, if form and the market is going to ultimately decide.
Yeah. We'll talk about Brewster. I watched that finish against Bristol City, Chris. That looked all right. He might have had a little bit of luck with it, but it looked like the sort of strike that comes from a man who's full of confidence.
Well, it's amazing what one goal does, because his goal against Blackburn was absolutely superb, and it was unfortunately kind of overshadowed by everybody else being terrible on the day, and which kind of proved to be the final straw in terms of how United were going to look forward. And then it was what I liked about that goal and indeed the goal against Blackburn, the two goals that he scored in the league this year, they were instinctive finishes. And that is what, if we're honest, we weren't seeing, because this was a player who was very clearly slightly low on, I'll say slightly, probably quite a fair bit, low on confidence. And he just appeared to be taking an extra touch when he didn't need to, or he was passing it when he was himself in a good position. And these two goals he scored, he's gone, I'm having that. And, you know, he's reaped the rewards of it. So hopefully, What that means is he's a player who United have on form and full of confidence, and he's going to build on that. And we will start to finally see the kind of form that we saw when he was playing for Swansea, where he did score goals like that, where it just everything just appeared to come so naturally for him.
I was just going to say, Chris, you're spot on, because those instinctive finishes, that was exactly what he was producing at the yeah. at the Liberty Stadium. It wasn't one, two, three touches and then bang. It was, well, by and large, every single goal he scored was almost the same goal. It was pass from Conor Gallagher, through, bang, goal.
And that's what we haven't seen enough of, but we got it. You know, the Blackburn goal was spectacular. The one on Sunday against Bristol City was just instinctive. A good ball put through to him. He shuffled his feet, got himself right, put it in the bottom corner. And that's what we want to see from him on a regular basis. And, well, you know, we can't guarantee that. And whether or not we see it is another thing. And ultimately, it'll be down to him as a player and those players around him providing them with the service, because that's what we also have to take into account, that the fact that, yes, he may not have been in the greatest form himself, but it wasn't like he was being given tons of chances to be hitting wide or missing the target or finding the goalkeeper with. Is actually the number of chances that he'd been getting in games was very low, because creatively United had been struggling. Basically, since he came into the club, United's creativity has been a lot lower than it had been in the few seasons before that. So that's not going to have helped him. But we did see that little bit of spark on Sunday, where things just kind of ramped up a little bit, where in terms of the intensity of the play and the just how quick they moved the ball and got the ball up the pitch a lot better. Rather than, you know, everybody having these kind of, oh, I'm going to have a touch here, I'm not too sure where I'm going to go with this. I'll go back to John Egan again and he can start it off again, and then it goes to somebody else and they kind of knock the ball around the final third without really doing anything about it. There were incisive passes. Everybody was moving a lot quicker. They were moving up the pitch a lot quicker, getting into better positions. And ultimately, that's what Ryan Brewster needs, because he wants somebody to do all the work on the edge of the box. He makes a run, and, you know, as I think he said, or Billy said himself, Billy Sharp is the master of that. And if he needs to know where he needs to be, then you've got no better player to teach him.
James, you met Ryan, or you spoke to Ryan yesterday, I believe. What were your impressions of him, and how was that conversation?
Yeah, do you know what? One of the real pains in the wotsits for us from a professional point of view about COVID has been, and I'm not obviously making light of it before people start sending in rude messages or shouting at the screen, is the fact that we've not really had an opportunity to meet the new players who have come in, like Ryan, during this period in the flesh. And, you know, you don't really get a feel for somebody over a Zoom call or anything like that. It's all a bit stilted. There's just not the same sort of relationship there. And I loved speaking to Ryan yesterday, because, you know, he came into the room. He was really happy to talk about everything. You know, I can remember saying to him, listen, there's something I'm personally quite interested in, not the theology side of it, but I'll stop waffling, but it goes back to my student days. But, you know, I talked to him about his faith, and he, you know, I remember saying to him, tell me to mind my own business if you want. But no, he was happy to talk about that. He talked about, you know, his sort of relationship with the supporters. And you sat there and you listen. I think Ryan said the fans have been great with me, and he talked about the moment that we'll be discussing in the paper and online about when he really realised that Sheffield United fans have his back. But I remember leaving the training ground where we did the interview and thinking, do you know what? I can understand why the football club haven't put him up for interview before, because they'll have been wanting to sort of protect him and make sure he stayed focused on his football and wouldn't want to expose him to any sort of awkward questions and put more pressure on him. never quite get this thing about footballers and putting pressure on, and they're always under pressure. If you can't handle pressure, you shouldn't be in the job. It's as simple as that. But I remember walking out of that of the training ground thinking, I really wish they'd put Rian up for interview sooner, because, you know, what an interesting, really amenable young man he is. And you really got that feeling yesterday when both Chris Wilder and Slavisa Jokanović had touched on the fact before, and Paul Heckingbottom when he was in interim charge last season. You really got to understand why, when all three of those managers were saying everyone here is so desperate for Rian to do well, just on a personal level. You really got a feeling of why yesterday, because I think most of the reporters in the room, and we can all be quite cynical in this game at times, can't we? But, you know, and we've had enough rubbish trotted out in front of us in the past to know what's it when you hear it. But Rian was just really engaging. He was just really friendly, really interesting. And you just thought, you know what? You are someone I really want to see do well. So it was fascinating, almost on a human level, before you even got into sort of the nitty-gritty of his career and his life and his faith and all stuff like that.
Brilliant stuff. Chris, we have our first question, which is an interesting one. I haven't seen this idea thrown out there. Michael Carrington asks, does Billy out of contract Doncaster player coach? I think obviously he's making that suggestion. Could that be an option for Donny? Get his badges, Blades manager under new ownership next 3 years. I don't know if he suggested maybe go there, do well, and then come back to Sheffield United. But let's just say the first part of that question. Is that a feasible prospect, do you think, to let Billy go this season?
No, I wouldn't have thought so. No, but Billy Sharp's got plenty to offer. You know, we've seen these... He's the club's leading goal scorer this season. He's still the one that looks most likely to score a goal for the club when they need it most or any time in the game. So I think it would be silly to let him go. On the Doncaster thing, I mean, I haven't heard anything. Obviously, Richie Wellens was only sacked yesterday. I don't know exactly what Billy Sharp's plans are for the future. I would imagine that he'd probably prefer to play for a little bit longer, or for as long as he possibly can, really. And I wouldn't have thought that Doncaster, in their position now, would be looking at a rookie manager to pull them out of that. Well, of course, I mean, they could probably do his goals if he is going to go down as a player coach, but I can't see that. My hope stroke hunch would be that Billy's first foray into coaching would probably come at Sheffield United.
Well, there's, I think Heckingbottom alluded to the fact that there could well be vacancies coming up within the youth setup and the under-23 setup. As they reshuffle in light of last week's news. James, let me ask you another question. Andy Mormon, I hope I've pronounced your surname correctly. My concern is if we let Basham go, we could end up losing Ben Davis, and that would leave us short for centre-backs. Any thoughts on that, James?
Yeah, no, I absolutely get where Andy's coming from, and this is something that I've touched on numerous occasions. And it goes back to that thing we were discussing earlier about the structure of the football club. I know... In one sense, people will argue having so many players out of contract is a blessing. And you can make an argument that allows you to reprofile your finances. And the football club will no doubt make the argument that they have options on a lot of these players. It's not a blessing. It's not a good position to be in, because all of the power is, you know... One of the things Chris Wilder spoke about was, in terms of contracts, was about bringing the power back to the football club. And because so many players are out of contract at the end of the season, options or not, you know, that power is beginning to shift back to the players. And that's not a situation you want to be in when you're running a football team. I think the deal for Ben Davis is going to be a difficult one to do. They're going to need an awful lot of help from Liverpool to do that. And Ben, if you understand where I'm coming from. And there clearly is a clearly is a possibility that Chris Basham could leave. I think that reverting to a back three will probably mean that he triggers that option or that clause within his contract that gets him another year. I think it's more likely now they are playing with three at the back because he's clearly more suited to that than he is in a four. But it is an issue. And I think what Andy's touched on there is one of these things that we spoke about right at the beginning of this show. You know, Paul Heckingbottom is in, great. Really hope he does well. Sure he will do well. Want him to do well. But there's still issues that need addressing at the football club. And if the football club pretends that there aren't issues that need addressing, it simply will not fulfil its potential. And I know people will be screaming at this saying, oh, stop being such a miserable so-and-so. I'm not being miserable. I'm just trying to be constructive. And I think Andy there, that question has just highlighted, you know, one of the things that the club really, really does need to get a grip of.
And not even at the end of the season as well, not, you know, in January or at the end of the season, Ben Davis goes, Chris Basham goes, Jack Robinson is a fairly able stand-in. I'm not sure if his contract's up at the end of the season, I can't remember. But that's potentially two centre-backs that need to be bought at the end of this season. And centre-backs are becoming a fairly rare commodity. Strong, capable centre-backs at that level are hard to come by. So that's two of those you need to find at the end of the season, effectively.
They need to get a grip of this now. They need to begin looking at this situation right now. This is one of the things that needs to be... allow Paul Heckingbottom... Listen, I'm sure he's told them this, because I know Paul's very big on strategy and planning. He spoke about having that, you know, the importance of having a proper strategy and plan before he relinquished control at the end of last season. Now, I think by the board's own admission, that plan wasn't properly articulated until last month, which is a shame. And that's probably one of the things that has contributed towards the slow start. That's the board's words, not mine. But this needs to be sorted. And anybody who tries to pretend that this is a good position to be in and that having so many players approaching the end of their deals is all part of some big master plan is simply, in my opinion, just talking utter rubbish, because it's not. It can't be. There's absolutely no way. And also, if it was part of the plan, then it goes against everything that we were told at the start of the season, whereby just about anyone you would bump into at Bramall Lane was saying, keep this squad together. We've got to keep it all together because this is a team that is capable of getting us out of the division. They've shown what they can do in the Premier League. And yet in the next breath, we're being told, well, you know, because it suits the argument, oh God, it's a really good idea to have so many of them out of contract because then we can get half of them out the door. Well, which one is it?
We are a couple of minutes over, but James, just before we go, I wanted to ask, I know you met Stuart McCall and Jack Lester earlier this week. Have their roles become any more clearly defined since that meeting?
Yeah. I mean, I think everybody pretty much knew what Stuart would have been doing because that, yeah. I absolutely get where you're coming from, Steve. I'm an assistant manager. That sort of speaks for itself. But sitting down with Jack, it was really interesting because head of player development, you know, we tried to get sort of answers about it during the press conference that announced Paul Heckingbottom's appointment last week. And, you know, we didn't really get them, I think it's fair to say. But sitting down with Jack, he was able to put a little bit more sort of flesh on the bones. And, so we did. I think one of the things that came out of it was he's clearly going to be a bridge between the academy where he worked in the past and the first team. He's clearly going to help Paul Heckingbottom stay in touch with what goes on there and play a part in bringing those players through. But it was also really interesting to hear him say that, listen, I'm doing an awful lot of work with the first team strikers as well as a former centre forward himself. And that was something that you know, I certainly learned from that discussion was how, you know, Paul Heckingbottom is probably going to be, as a former defender, he's probably going to be doing a lot of one-to-one work with the defenders. Stewart being an ex-midfielder with the midfielders, Jack, etc., you know, ex-striker with the strikers. So I thought that was really interesting to hear. And he said that's something they've been doing at the academy for quite a while as well. So it was a fascinating chat and a really informative one as well.
Great stuff. We'll leave it there for this week, but fingers crossed the Blades can continue their resurgence this weekend. Thanks for listening, and thanks to those of you who submitted questions and comments, and we'll see you next time.